San Francisco was a working little town with an enormous cash flow that was right for the boys to move in and take it over. It was a tourist town within a business town, within a high real estate town, unlike any other city in America. Never had a negative cash flow. This is why the boys came in and took it over.
And then what happened?
They got themselves elected to office, and they proceeded to monetize city services.
What does monetizing mean?
Anything that could be farmed out to another agency and money made on it, outside special interests, became a huge force in San Francisco, starting in the 70s. Now, as they got control, they set up a political machine.
My guest today is Tony Hall, former San Francisco supervisor, who shares an insider view on why the city is struggling and what it will take to fix it and return San Francisco to its glory.
I knew a lot of it because I worked for the city for 35 years. I saw a lot the way it was done, and I realized there's a lot better way to do things than the way we're doing it for the people of San Francisco.
The pay-to-play is happening across the board. You donate to politicians and then they do favors for you. How's that played in this system?
The city calls for competitive bidding on contracts. Usually it winds up the same old guys always get the contract.
So there's some tricks played behind the scenes legally to
get it. Exactly. The problems we have in San Francisco are man-made, pure and simple.
I'm Siamak Kurami. Welcome to California Insider. Tony, it's great to have you back on. Welcome back.
Siamak, thank you very much. Once again, I feel like I'm home here. No,
excellent.
Thank you. Thank you
for
having me on.
We're excited to have you on. And we are hearing some news out of San Francisco. Mm. Some are really positive. So there's apparently less tents on the streets from what we've seen, from what we've heard on the news. And then there is also another side where, unfortunately, the negative side, the commercial vacancies, 37%, they're increasing. Can you tell us what's happening in your city?
The positive stuff you're hearing from the city, I would say, hearing about the city, is in big part to this $4.5 million PR campaign that the mayor has introduced about a month and a half ago to turn the image around. So we have a huge effort being made public relations-wide to say, no, San Francisco is better than what the country thinks, or better than this and better. It's a great city. Is it really getting better? That's up for debate. We can talk about that. Getting into the vacancy rate, last time I was here, the last show we did, it was around 34%, the downtown business vacancy rate. It's now up about 37. So I'm not one that believes and the PR spin too much. I look out there, I see what's going on with my own eyes. The city is not getting any better, unfortunately. There's a way for it to get better, which we'll discuss later, but no. It's homelessness is still there, same numbers, it's been moved around. Crime, still there, it's been moved around. There is an effort to curtail the crime, hasn't caught on yet. And corruption, corruption's inbred there. That's going to be a tough one to root out.
And what do you see on the ground? You say things have been moved around. Where are they? Are they in other neighborhoods?
Well, San Francisco, as I've said before many times, a very small, manageable city with a very big bureaucracy. It's very easy to move the homeless encampments around from one part of the city to the other, or off this street, main thoroughfare for business, into a side street. Very easy to move them around. Department of Public Works does that. For example, when the president of China came, Xi, they cleaned that town up within a week. They moved the homeless encampments away from where the conference was, the meetings, and it was engineered. Interesting, they can do it for a foreigner like that, but they can't do it for the residents that live there. They moved them to different areas of the city. This is a tactic that has been used for the last 25 years that I know of, moving the homeless around to make it seem like there's not so many, moving them in different areas. It's easy to do when you have a city like San Francisco. Couldn't do it in L.A. Too big, too scattered. But San Francisco, manageable, you can do things like that.
Now, Tony, most people wonder, because this is a very rich city. You know, it's a wealthy city, and you guys are very classy, and you have culture there. some people say it's because of COVID. It's a downtown center. You know, this is impacted by when the pandemic happened. Now this is the result of the pandemic. What are your thoughts? Where did this come from?
We'd have to go into the whole background of how the city became the way it is because of its man-made problems. Who's in charge? How it happened? The problems we have in San Francisco are man-made. It's not due to COVID, as many of the apologetics for the political ruling class would tell you. COVID hit, all cities went down. No, our problems in San Francisco are due to mismanagement, pure and simple. And the closer we get to acknowledging that, the more we're gonna understand how can we fix it, the more we're gonna understand the ways to fix the city, and we'll get into that in a minute. The city did not go down because of COVID. Sure, we had measures. A lot of people were told to stay home and don't work. Well, that's over with now. They're not coming back for a reason. A lot of people don't want to work downtown San Francisco. They don't want to step over the homeless encampments or around them. They don't want to deal with the crime on their way to work. They don't want to deal with the parking or the public transportation. So, yes, COVID had an effect, but that's over with. It affected the whole country, all the cities in the country. But San Francisco in particular was hit hard because of mismanagement. We closed our schools, we closed our churches, we closed our downtown businesses. Stay away, stay away, stay away. COVID. We shouldn't have done that in all cases. It's easy to look back and say, well, we made a mistake. But no, that's only part of it. The real problem is mismanagement. Mismanagement. We've done nothing to encourage downtown business. We've chased them away.
Where did this mismanagement come from, and how was San Francisco before? How was it ran before?
San Francisco CMAQ, and we've talked about this, and most people across the country that's ever visited San Francisco will agree with me. It was a very unique city, a wonderful little city of 850, maybe up to 900,000 at one time. It's down to about 800,000 now. But it was a city that was unlike any other city on the West Coast. It was very, it had the European flair of a cosmopolitan city, much like Paris, Rome, whatever, the European cosmopolitan aspect. It had the mystic charm of some of the cities of the Orient, the Eastern cities. A lot of Asians there, but it had a great Asian influence that was flourishing. It had the robust roguishness of the Wild West, the Gold Rush era. So it was a combination of all these things and a very landlocked little piece of real estate that was blessed. It had a wonderful downtown center. It built up. Now, don't forget, the first part of the last century, San Francisco was ruled by businessmen. They knew what a profit was. They knew how to put the money back into the community to build it up. Actually, most of those, and I'm not pushing one party over another because I'm an independent, but it was ruled by Republicans up until about the 60s, the 1960s. They were businessmen. The Board of Supervisors at one time was 18 members, all made from businessmen from all different walks of life. So the bottom line, make this place good and better, was the bottom line. Very parochial. Parochial, I mean, they elected their politicians based upon their integrity, their honesty, their pride, and their willingness to do good for the city. That's what San Francisco was all about. That's what it was when I first came there and witnessed this. I thought, boy, I haven't seen civic pride like this and integrity. This thing about self-promotion and moving up the political ladder was disdained upon. It was something that was loathed. If you were self-promoting rather than promoting the city, the benefits of the city, you didn't make it. So it was a very parochial little town.
When you say civic pride, can you explain that? What was it like?
You had a great public school system. You had suburban housing areas within the city confines. Within that city, you had little pockets of
neighborhoods, and
neighborhoods that rivaled anything in the state. But most importantly, look at the number of national businesses that were headquartered there. If you look at the downtown, it was a conglomeration of nationally headquartered businesses. Most of them sprung up from San Francisco. Wells Fargo, Langendorf Bread, the sourdough bread industries of the wharf. And you can go on, the Rolfe business. There's all kinds of businesses that came from San Francisco that flourished across the country but kept their headquarters downtown San Francisco. So a wonderful business community sprung up that rivaled cities 10 times its size, Boston, Chicago. I mean, our downtown business sector was booming, and the taxes they paid were big for a small town. The taxes they were paying to live and do business in San Francisco as a corporation, they were huge taxes. On top of that, you had a real estate market that was probably the most expensive in the country for many, many years. And you had a tourist and convention business, entertainment business, but tourist and convention, second to none. Everybody wanted to have their convention in San Francisco. So it was a tourist town within a business town, within a high real estate town, and it was all near great universities, higher centers of learning. So it was a very unusual conglomeration of people from all walks of life, many different races, living in an area in harmony, and very proud to live there. It was hard to make your living in San Francisco. The homes weren't bigger. They were more expensive. The schools, private schools, were available. Everything was there. So very enviable. A lot of people wanted to live in San Francisco. They came from all over the world. But a lot of Americans, the dream city, San Francisco, the romantic dream city that we all loved, and songs were written about it, movies were made about it. You know, we had our own little Hollywood up there for movies. So what happened? It got invaded. That little parochial group of people that ran the town, now whether they were businessmen or whatever, a lot of people don't like the sound of business, but they were businessmen. They knew how to put the money back in to keep it attractive. They got invaded. And their values, the 70s came along, the values, the Me Too, the Me generation, me, they didn't value integrity and honesty and giving back to the community. Their goal was to make it for themselves. So here's a little town ripe for the pickings. You couldn't do this in L.A. You could not do this in Sacramento. You couldn't do it in San Diego because they're too big, too diverse. But San Francisco was a working little town with an enormous cash flow that was right for the boys to move in and take it over. And it got invaded by statewide politicians. The Democratic Party was fair game. They set up neighborhood groups, they set up cells, they set up a school of volunteers, all ready to set the world on fire. And they did the business of governance different than San Franciscans. They got themselves elected to school boards, board of supervisors, and all the neighborhood groups. They infiltrated that town. Why? Because of the money. And they knew if they could get control of the Democratic Party in San Francisco, they could control that town. And they did it. These were guys that were used to doing favors, political favors, in an anonymous atmosphere. The old San Franciscan guy, what parish did you belong to? What church, what group did you belong to? It was all done favors, who you know and whatnot. I'm not saying it was corruption-free or anything like that. It had its own version of that, which it dealt with in a very San Francisco way. But now it was invaded by a bunch of statewide politicians and political hacks who saw a chicken right for the picking, if you will, or plucking. Why? Now, let me just go a little bit further. In addition to the business community, the high-end real estate, the conventions, you had four agencies, enterprise agencies, that were set up by the city to make money. That's why it's in real important.
What were those agencies?
Those agencies are the port, the airport, the Municipal Transportation Authority, and the public utilities. They were all set up as enterprise agencies by the city and county of San Francisco to make money, and they made money. People were flying in the airport, people were taking public transportation there, just four enterprise agencies. Now, don't forget, San Francisco is a city and a county in one. It's a city and county in one. By that, I mean there is no separate ruling body.
One county and city together.
One mayor, one board of supervisors rule the city and county with these wonderful enterprise agencies, with a downtown sector that was booming, with a real estate market that was booming, with a small business sector that was booming. You can go on and on and on. Cash flow, unlike any other city in America, never had a negative cash flow. So this drew, this is why the boys came in and took it over.
And now, what happened?
What happened? They got themselves elected to office, and they proceeded to monetize city services. Services then became up to the highest bidder.
Can you explain what does monetizing mean?
It means, let's say your parking tickets that were issued in that city, which actually drew more revenue than the parking tickets in the whole of Los Angeles, instead of being processed by the municipal court, all of a sudden it was these tickets were processed by a group out of Los Angeles. For the price of the ticket went up three times.
Wow.
The administrative cost. That's what I'm talking about. Anything that could be farmed out to another agency and money made on it, that's what happened. And this is what the statewide politicians did to San Francisco. They saw a transportation, the supply of the cars, farm it out. Everything was for sale. Everything was for sale. That's what I mean. To the highest bidders. So special interest, outside special interest, became a huge force in San Francisco. And this is what the statewide politicians did to San Francisco, starting in the 70s. Now, as they got control, they set up a political machine. They set up a political machine in this new breeding ground of theirs that would develop candidates for office and export them all over the country. And all you have to do is look at the number of politicians from San Francisco on the national scale. That's why they became a powerful political machine. They got wealth, they got power, and they have their own little breeding ground for politicians.
That's why people get onto the school boards and
exactly,
from there they go.
Exactly. Neighborhood groups controlled by the machine. I can go on and on and on here without boring you, but so this is what happened. The town, you know, it was no longer who you knew and what school you went to and what family and what little clan is going to take over the city. This is a machine-run town, and its services were being monetized to the highest bidder.
And so essentially, people get contracts from the city? Can you explain that? They
get
contracts, do they get benefits?
Without a doubt. This is the problem with our homeless industry today. Our services to service that industry, the food, the shelter, the housing, the clothing, whatever, are all done through nonprofits, selected nonprofits by the machine. And those nonprofits,
do they pay back to them?
Those nonprofits are part of the money trail that perpetuates keeping these guys in office. They put the campaign workers out on the street when campaign time comes. They are probably delivering 60-70% of their budget is not going to what it's intended for. This is just a recent example of what we're talking about. If you go back over time, you look at the airport, you look at the municipal transportation, you look at the port, all of our services have been out-serviced to corporations, to different groups. But it's who you know that gets it. It's not the San Franciscan. In other words, the city lost out to self-serving, self-promoting politicians. They were no longer benefiting the city.
So before it was that money from the airport and other facilities.
The money was going back into the community because everybody knew the guy in office. He was accountable to your next door neighbor. No one knew. When the machine took over, everybody lost hope. They got apathetic. Oh, they never saw anything like this. It went on in L.A. It went on in bigger places, but it never went on in a condensed little area like San Francisco. So that's what happened. I'm cutting right through it, and it may be hard for people to understand, but I'm cutting right to the quick. It was taken over by a political machine.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about Verify for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at YRefi and then tell them Siamak Khorami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. The pay-to-play is happening across the board. You donate to politicians and then they do favors for you. How's that played in this system? Can you explain that?
Well, you can't do business in San Francisco unless you're part of a special interest group. That's what runs the city. Special interest groups run that city, and it drives the price of doing business way up. It's pay to play. You want a contract here to get rid of all the excess paper the city produces, you pay for that. You pay for this, you pay for that.
You pay by donating to politicians, or
you bid. We have a I think you had a show on this once. You know, the city calls for competitive bidding on contracts. It's how that's handled that's interesting, because usually it winds up the same old guys always get the contract, no matter if they're bidding higher.
So there's some tricks played behind the scenes legally to
get it. Exactly, exactly. And it's being chosen not by the people. People aren't voting for this. It's being chosen by the people in office. The contracts doled out to the nonprofits are pretty much determined by the mayor's office and the mayor's office of housing. Nonprofit housing has to go to this group. There's no tax-paying group reviewing these contracts.
Is it across the board now?
Yes.
So is it everywhere in these agencies?
Yes. Our once second to none civil service system of merit-based jobs to go to work for the city. We operated on a civil service system that was merit-based. That's all gone. It's now all patronage. It's who you know to get the job.
So, Tony, was there a time you figured this out?
Well, I certainly didn't know all of it when I was on the Board of Supervisors. I learned a lot of it.
This was 20 years ago, right?
Right. Yeah. I knew a lot of it because I worked for the city for 35 years. I saw a lot the way it was done, and I realized there's a lot better way to do things than the way we're doing it for the people of San Francisco. My special interest, CMAC, has always been just the people. It's not in my DNA, to use a bad term, to pimp for a special interest group. I can't do that. My special interest is the people. And I held 7 different executive positions in all 3 branches of government, but always with the, how does this affect the people? And I'm not bragging, I'm just saying, so you learn. When I got elected, I realized, whew, I may be 1 or 2 out of 11 that thinks that way. How does this piece of legislation affect our constituents? No. The rest of those people, I got a program here, care not cash, I got a program here, I got a program, to elevate themselves to higher office. That's what the machine does. It breeds politicians to elevate them up the ladder so they can run for governor, president, whatever. And this I learned on the board. The proceeds of these political battles don't go back into the welfare of the people. Don't go back into servicing. They go in the pockets of the guys running the show. And they, in turn, use them to keep the machine going. San Francisco, that little bitty town, has produced national leaders 10 times more than any other city around.
Now, do you think this system is causing what's happening in San Francisco today?
San Francisco today is the result of a machine that has dealt with self-promotion, new ideas, exploiting the people, every which way it could. And that's why San Francisco is the way it is today. They ignored big business. They closed the traffic on the streets. The preferred mode of transportation in San Francisco, and any San Franciscan, not any, but the majority of San Franciscans would tell you it's the auto. They want to be able to drive their car at least as close to their shopping destination as they can, so they don't have to carry their packages home on a municipal transportation system that's fallen apart, where there's crime and everything else. So they ignored that. They closed all the streets. They choked the streets off. They put bicycle lanes, another minority, ruling the majority, the bicycle crowd. They put those down the middle of streets. They closed the streets off to auto transportation. At the same time, because they run the city garages, what do? They up the parking charge. They make it punitive to park rather than encourage people to come down and park. You got to pay $20 an hour or whatever it is to park your car. People can't afford it. So they've choked downtown business. At the same time, they didn't pay attention to crime on the street. Crime's been rampant. These smash and grab things have closed a lot of stores. Outside of the fact the customers aren't able to get downtown anymore. Now I'm just talking about the shopping. The big corporations, they were being gouged. Their tax structure, it's gouging. So they're leaving. They're going to Irvine. They're going to different parts of the state. Our real estate market, our housing costs were, as you know, very expensive up there. You get a third of the size of house, which you pay three times more for any other spot. That's gone. People are moving out of the city because they're saying, I can't make it. I don't want to live here anymore under these circumstances. So the housing market has deteriorated. Less taxes to the city. For every business that closed, there's a diminished tax base. Our downtown is 37% vacant. Imagine the amount of taxes that the city is not getting. Our real estate market is collapsing. Our tourist and convention business doesn't exist because people don't want to come there because of the crime and the homelessness. So I doubt if a $4.5 million PR program that the mayor is instituting is going to correct these problems. It's not. There's only certain things that will correct these problems.
So can you tell us what are those things, in your opinion,
to fix San Francisco? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I spent the last 5 weeks talking to people, over 150 people. I think it was more like 160, just out of curiosity, doing my own polling and surveying, because I don't trust much of what I read. And I judge people, politicians, by their deeds, not by how they look or how they talk. But I set across to devise points that the average San Franciscan wants to see change in his town. And I came down to six areas that need to be fixed to make San Francisco healthy, not like it was in the 30s and 40s and 50s, but to make it healthy. We have three real killers who are going on hurting us right now: homelessness, crime, and corruption. So let's start with those three. Homelessness. Now here's a fix for you. And I want to throw this out there, and a lot of people agree with me. We can no longer afford to treat the homeless from all over the world, certainly from all over this country, coming to San Francisco. We have, and depending upon who's doing the count, anywhere between 7,500 and 13,000 homeless people on the streets of San Francisco. Why are they coming there? For the benefits, the weather, and the services. We can no longer do that. So there's a new concept that I'm going to throw out here. The inn is now closed. We are going to treat our own people, San Franciscans, first. And hopefully this will resonate across the country. Take care of your own people. We don't have the money to treat the root causes of homelessness for everybody. But we do have enough money, more than enough money, to treat our own people first. The root causes. For example, we have 3,200 shelter beds in San Francisco. We've identified 2,800 people from San Francisco who are now homeless. They should get priority. Homeless for various reasons. They've fallen on bad times, drug addiction, mental health. So let's give the shelter beds to those people first and demand that they receive proper treatment for their drug addiction or substance addiction, whatever it is, or mental health. This administration and the past two administrations talked about facilities. Oh, we're spending billions of dollars on homeless and facilities and this and that. Facilities aren't there. We have addiction centers where people can go shoot up. We don't have a center where someone can go to and get treatment for mental health. So we want to take the money we're spending. People will tell you it's $1 billion, $1.1 billion. It's more like $2 billion a year. It's seven times per homeless person what they're spending in Los Angeles.
A lot higher. Like it's almost $140,000 per year.
It's almost $100,000 per homeless person.
You could just give the money to someone as a really high salary.
Exactly. Exactly. You can give them the money and put them on a new walk of life, a new path of life. But we're spending well over $120,000 per homeless person in San Francisco. I don't care how the count is done. But what I'm saying is let's treat our own first so we can treat them with compassion, so we can really look at the root cause of that person's homelessness and treat it. We have the money. If we're compassionate people, this is what we need to do. Let's treat those people and hopefully get them on their way to rehabilitation. We can't do it when you're treating 12,000, 10,000, 12,000, 13,000 people. That's where the city's making a mistake. And it draws more people in. All we can do is try to keep them fed off the street and away from disease and all that. That's all we can do. We have to boil it down and tell the rest of the country, you got to treat your own. We're going to treat our own. So we need a past residency requirement.
If the person, so make sure the person is from San Francisco.
Yes, we have to have some proof that they're from San Francisco. We also are spending enough money to set up these facilities that I'm talking about, mental health treatment centers, addiction treatment centers. Right now, we're just spending money in nonprofits, interviewing them, and this and that. The centers aren't there. They're not there, and that's one of the big cons. So we have enough money to set those up. We have enough money to give the shelter beds to our people, get them off the street. Those people that refuse to take treatment and they're on public assistance, they're gone. They're given 60 days to get their act together or leave San Francisco, and we will help pay for their way back from wherever their last permanent place of residence. We'll do means testing. We'll take the encampments and put them in one part of a city until give them 30 days to either come up with a reason why they stay there or residents or they have to go. We can't treat them. We will not have the money, and it takes away from those who really need treatment. So 30, 60 days, whatever you want to give them, but we put it in one part of the city where we can handle them, we can interview them, we can assess their needs and really do something about it. You're going to find most of them will leave. There's no free lunch anymore. We're here to treat our own and help them out. So the inn is now closed. And another thing I would do is I would scrutinize within the homeless practice all the nonprofits. They estimate there's like 600 nonprofits doing business in the city.
And there's
county.
A few of them that actually got accused of corruption, and there's cases of money coming out.
Just the last couple of days, a few of them have surfaced that they're misusing money. But there's more than a few. They're not doing the job. So we need to scrutinize everything they're doing and review it by a committee of tax-paying residents. Not the mayor's office, because these people are being chosen out of the mayor's office. We need a complete review of the nonprofit homeless service industry. That's where the money's going, CMAC. If we're spending $2 billion, I guarantee you we can save $1 billion.
Wow.
And when I say $2 billion, the city will admit to $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion. They're not talking about the money from the Department of Public Works to clean up the streets. And they're not talking about the Department of Social Services is adding more money in. We're spending about $2 billion annually. So that's my homeless program. We're now going to treat San Franciscans. If we have money left over, we'll treat other people. But we want to treat our own people the right way. The second area, crime. Crime. Let's talk about crime. Zero tolerance when it comes to crime. How do we achieve that? Well, first of all, we get a police chief who's from San Francisco, who knows the idiosyncrasies of that city, who comes from that city, who has a leadership ability to lead his fellow officers at premium performance. That's all it is. This is exactly what Christopher did when Ahern and Cahill were chosen as police chiefs back in the 60s. You go to the ranks and you pick out a San Franciscan. They know that city. You can't bring a guy in from Arizona, from the East Coast or someplace to know San Francisco. San Francisco is unique. It's different. I mean, it's we have produced great men and women, law enforcement people. They should be not rewarded, but given a chance to lead their own people. Don't bring some guy in from out of town who doesn't know San Francisco. It's going to take him 2 years to find his way around the block, and people won't work with him. So you need to have a police chief that has the confidence and the leadership ability to lead his own San Franciscans to clean that city up. Two, response time. When Alioto was mayor, the response time when you called the cops was about a minute 10 seconds. Response time now is hours.
Wow.
You get your house broken into, it could be hours before the cops show up. They get there, they do the best they can. We've got great men and women, they're not being led. So you demand a response time, a new response time. You demand a fully staffed police department. Up to 1,994 officers is what the charter calls for. We're down around 1,400. Why? With all the money we're spending up there, we can't fully staff our police department? That's a joke. And this latest bond issue measure they had, which said pay an extra tax and we'll fully staff the police department, that's wrong. That is wrong. That's simple. That's wrong. Now, these are all points I'm bringing up to you that the average San Franciscan...
told you, right.
This is what they want. Now, a lot of the advocates aren't going to agree with this. You know, the people from the left and the machine, they're gonna slam this down. But I guarantee you, more than 50, probably 60% of the San Franciscans are gonna agree with what I'm saying. Oh, and the last thing on crime, you have to enforce all the laws. Enforce the laws. That's what a police department does. Enforce the laws. That's smash and grab, that's car stops, that's muggings, everything.
The car break-ins where they're taking backpacks and things from.
Exactly. Enforce all laws. And the last thing is set up a public tracking system where every crime charged can be followed by the public through the legal system, through the police department, onto the DA, from the DA onto the courts. And it shows what judge is handling that case so we can hold those responsible whose business it is to adjudicate these matters. And then you're going to find a lot of the judges that are just letting these guys go, they're in the spotlight. They're going to change. The DA, we're not going to let things slide anymore. The public's going to look at this. A public tracking system. Online, public tracking, very important. Okay, so that's crime. Corruption, I get to that real quick. No more corruption. And now I'm going to get hit real big on this because 40% of that town is working right now on corruption. But no more corruption. Anybody, any civil servant, any member of the city family engaged in corruption, prosecuted to the fullest under civil and criminal codes. We cannot have that. You can't, that's got to go. So corruption's simple. Now let's talk about the big kahuna that you were talking about earlier, downtown business. The Bicycle Coalition, great, I love people that ride bikes, but Ma and Pa Kettle and the grandfathers and the kids can't all ride bikes downtown. So what we've done is the current administration and the director of transportation has choked out access to downtown by putting bike lanes down the middle of the streets, putting one-way streets, slowed traffic up where just a third of the cars that we had 10 years ago can go downtown. People can't drive downtown anymore. Well, businesses can't survive if people can't get to them. The Muni is in bad shape, the municipal transportation. That's not always accessible, doesn't always run on time. If it does, you get half your packages stolen. So the preferred way for Americans to travel is by car. Why deny it? Open those streets up to efficient traffic flow rather than choking them as we're doing at present. Open the streets that have been closed. Market Street, streets downtown, one way going here, open it up. This has been anti the transit first policy that has existed in the last 20 years, has ruined transportation in San Francisco. People are telling me, I want the ability to drive my car around. You go downtown, every curb downtown is painted yellow. No one's loading and unloading in San Francisco. Very few people. In New York, they have hours for loading in the middle of the night, in the early morning. But all the streets downtown San Francisco are painted yellow. No one can pull over and park. You can get a ticket if you do that. All the meters that operated downtown, they're gone. You go to San Francisco, you see all these little parklets that have been established. This is taxpayers have paid for those streets, yet the city is turning around and selling space in front of businesses, restaurants, for their expansion at so much a month to the city. How is the taxpayer benefiting here? It's being farmed out. We are allowing business expansion, which we should try to promote, but not at the expense of the customer. The customer can't park. There's parklets all over the city. So that's got to be reviewed. But we have to make traffic flow once again so that our businesses can flourish. So, CMAC, we've covered homelessness, crime, and corruption. There's two more areas I'd like to cover. City services. What people want from their city. I'll tell you what they want. They want all the city departments streamlined for personnel. We now have twice as many civil servants as we did when I was on the board.
It's like 35,000 or something. It's like 5% of
closer
the people.
Closer to 40 when you take in the part-timers. Yeah. When I was on, it was 23 to 25,000. So we're double. So let's streamline that and keep on the personnel we need to provide basic city services.
So like red tape for permits and things like that.
Yes. Let's streamline it. All agencies, all 99 agencies, whatever it is now, might be 110, 150, I don't know. People want accessibility to City Hall. When you call up City Hall, I don't care what department it is, you get a telephone, answering machine, and after 20 prompts, it hangs up on you. You go down to City Hall, no one's working, the doors are all closed, you can't get anybody at the counter. And if you do, they say, we have to make an appointment to come back from that. It's no longer accessible. So one of the things we do is we make our city departments accessible to public inquiry. They have to have someone there to answer questions. The phone lines have to be manned. You have to get a real person, and you need a response. They're working for the people. That we have to do.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com.
A big one. I would completely revamp the Department of Elections. If we have to get a new director, let's do it. But let's revamp it. Let's purge our roles that haven't been purged in 32 years. Let's get the election squared away. Let's get the advantage that goes to the machine through cheating, 15 to 18%. Get rid of that. Revamping of the Department of Elections so our votes count. Everybody knows what's going on. That's important. All, again, I mentioned the nonprofits, all reviewed for effectiveness and for delivery of services. If not, they're gone. Eliminate them. Our commission system. In the last three decades, we've set up commissions for everything. Oh, this commission, that commission. Commission system has been used to remove those responsible from oversight. That's all it is. I got a commission. Talk to the commission. Don't talk to me. Don't hold me accountable. My commission's doing it. Get rid of the commission system. If you need a commission because it's the type of service that needs oversight, fine. But let's get rid of 80% of the commissions there because they're running nothing but interference for the elected person. That's all. Cut that out. That's more bureaucracy. Governance. This is big now. Let's talk about governance for a minute because this is what San Franciscans in the know want. We have to return to zero-based budgeting. Zero-based department budgeting, which means every year that budget is looked at from zero. You don't get to roll over all the money you saved from the year before. You don't get to not hire 10 people and then put that on the next year's budget. Every year, go back to zero-based budgeting. That's huge. That'll save the city millions. It was always that way up until the mid-60s, even into the 70s. We had zero-based budgeting. We have to go back. That's smart, intelligent budgeting. The merit-based system of employment we talked about. Reestablish the civil service merit-based system. Regardless of race, color, creed, you get a crack at getting a job. It's no longer patronage. Get rid of the patronage system. Majority rule. This is, now I'm not talking race here. When you mention majority, minority, oh, everybody thinks race. I'm talking about majority rule, which says in all public matters, the majority of the people, regardless of what they look like, are the people we're interested in. This is where my special interests come in. The little guy out there. The guy that's not represented by a special interest doing bidding for a city contract. Majority rule, very important. It's an American thing. And we need to reinstitute that and think that way. No longer can a little minority of three or four loudmouths make a decision that affects everybody. Majority rule is very important. And I put this forth as a challenge to these guys running for mayor. We'll talk about that in a minute. Use the mayor's office to promote candidates for the Board of Supervisors that actually have the constituents' welfare at heart. So use it to bring the right people on board that are working for the citizens of San Francisco. Use the mayor's office to put a candidate in for the district attorney who actually knows how to prosecute crime so that the benefit is an increased safety for the public. Forget about all the talk. I'm doing all this, I'm prosecuting that. Put a district attorney in there who knows how to prosecute so the end result is increased safety. Put a city attorney in there, you promote him for office. A city attorney that knows how to navigate the legal system in California to implement some of these suggestions. You go to the state and you say, look, it's not a vagrancy matter. Our homeless problem is no longer vagrancy. It's a health and safety problem. Let's look at it that way through the courts, because it is. You go to these encampments, people are suffering. They got scabies, they got the rickets, they got everything. There's health now, and it's affecting the public. It's no longer a vagrancy problem. I need a city attorney that's going to know how to get that through the court system. So I'm going to promote a guy like that. And lastly, and this is really, I'm finding this a lot of people, this is controversial, but the average San Franciscan is going to agree with this. You need to repeal the sanctuary city status because it's a misnomer. We're no longer a sanctuary city for the people looking to escape persecution in other countries. We're a sanctuary city as a way to go around the laws. We need to repeal ranked choice voting. Because ranked choice voting, no one understands. Maybe 30% of the people might understand it. But one thing ranked choice voting has done, it's helped the machine because it assures that the most qualified and the most intelligent candidate doesn't always win. 9 out of 10 times you're going to get the third or fourth qualified, and the machine can handle him real easy because he's not as bright. And lastly, repeal district elections. Repeal district elections. We're a town of 800,000 people, losing people monthly. We don't need 11 supervisors in 11 different districts to run that city. As a supervisor, I was asked to weigh in on things, citywide stuff, but I wasn't beholden to those people. I was elected from one little district, but I was asked to weigh in on things from those people, they could, didn't matter to me. I'm making decisions for them. I didn't, they didn't elect me. You don't need district elections in that little town. Make them at large. People will say, well, look at the cost of running. Before I was elected, the cost of running at large was anywhere between, at a large basis, about 75 to 100,000. Now, to get elected district supervisor in one out of 11 districts, quarter of a million. I ran against a gal who spent $1 million hard and soft, money, illegal money coming into the campaign. I beat her with 100,000, but that was a unique case. Cost to run for supervisor in district today costs more than it did 20 years ago to run citywide. Get rid of district elections. It's too scattered, and it keeps the machine in control. See, if a guy is run at large and he wins at large, he could challenge the machine. They don't want that. They want to keep him there, North Beach, Sunset, keep him out there. To keep them divided. Keep the troops divided, and you can maintain control. That's what they've done. They've divided that once great city whose primary goal was to make things better for everybody. They've divided it. Now they got the blacks fighting against the whites. They got the Asians fighting against the Mexicans. They got everybody fighting. Everything's divided, and we keep it that way because that's how we control. In the meantime, we're selling your services. We're selling contracts to the highest bidder. And not only that, we're running candidates that are doing the bidding of the special interest. And not only that, we're determining who runs for office, because politics is a combination of perception and advertising. That's what it is. And we spend more money to get elective office in San Francisco than they do in anywhere else in the country. That's the truth. To run for office there is really expensive. These guys running for mayor are going to spend $8-10 million.
Wow.
The average guy can't run for office. He can't afford it. He can't afford it. It's a machine-run town. And the sooner the average San Franciscan realizes that and stands up and learns the issues and votes, not for what they hear, but for the issues, they think it through, the better off that town will be.
You have been vocal about all this, and you've really analyzed the city. And why are you doing this?
You know, that's a good question. I'm doing this because I love the city. I'm not the only one. There is people up there from San Francisco that have made that their lives there. They've raised their families there. It's a great city, as we went over earlier. This city is unique. It needs to come back. It needs to raise up out of the ashes. It already did it once out of the earthquake, and I'm not being romanticized or dramatic. It can come back. It's a great city. I love it. I love the people there. They supported me when I was in office. I want to give back. I'm doing this here as a gift to the people and a challenge to those running for the mayor's office. There's four or five people of name that are running. Let's see if you have the guts to put what 50 to 60% of the people want. Let's see if you have the guts to make this city whole. All of them are out of one machine. Now, I admit to a bias, I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent. They're all Democrats. They're all representing special interests. If you look at the money behind them, each one of them is representing a special interest. Let's see if you, as a candidate, have the guts to stand up and say, I want to do what's right for the city. Here you go, boys. There's six areas right there. Think about it, because that's what people want. That's what people want. See if you have the guts to go there. And if you do, you'll get elected and you'll be mayor. If I was 20 years younger or I had a special interest behind me, I'd be in this race in a heartbeat tomorrow. And I'd out-debate you because I know what the people want. This is the result of what people want. It's not what Tony Hall wants. It's what I put together by talking to people. This is what they want. Maybe you don't agree with it, maybe you do agree with it, but think it over. This is how you're going to make that city whole. By whole, I mean working for the people that are paying the bill. That, guys, and I could use your name, that's your special interest, the people. Not the people from Silicon Valley, not the people from the building industry, not the haberdasheries from downtown, or, you know, it's the people. And that's why I'm doing this, period. I got 7 kids there, you know. They got a future. I want them to be in and around San Francisco. I live there for a reason. I hope that answers the question. It's a challenge. And, you know, don't let it pass, guys. This, now is the time to do it. Don't let this thing pass. Now's the time to get this city healthy again so that 10 years from now, people the world over say, oh, San Francisco, I love it, I want to go there. No one says that anymore. God, I remember the days years ago when you said you were from San Francisco, people, they loved it. They loved it. Now you say San Francisco and they look at you like you're crazy, you know? Let's fix it. Let's fix it. It's hard. You're not going to be everybody's number one. You're going to have to deal with the Board of Supervisors when you're in there. If you're clever, you'll develop your own board. If you're clever, you'll promote your own. You'll get the people in there. But short of that, it's not going to happen. So,
Tony, hopefully people have heard what you have to say, and hopefully some of these candidates may tell us what their plans are.
Well, I'm doing this in your show because your show is based upon honesty and integrity. I'm not doing this in front of the Chronicle or their different boards. I'm doing this in the California Insider because you guys believe in putting the truth out there. And that's what this is. You know, if I was doing this in somebody else, I'd be part of a special interest group or part of a spin. No, that's not me. And I'm doing this on this show because I believe that the message of this show will resonate with San Franciscans if they tune into this. If they can tune into California Insider, it's going to spread like wildfire. Look, there's someone speaking up for what we need, what we want. And then put the pressure on those candidates and see who steps up to the plate.
Tony, thank you for believing in us and coming and sharing this. It's really important for San Franciscans. It was great to have you on. Tony Hall, former supervisor from San Francisco.
CMAC, thank you very much for allowing me on, you and your crew here. And again, I hope this show goes viral so every San Franciscan up there can look at it and say, hey, now we have a direction.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're gonna come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below because you want to sign up on our newsletter because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.